This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on the point of view of three capitals during Ukraine conflict. Brussels is the capital of NATO. However, NATO is meeting in these next days in Madrid to look at what the New York Times characterizes as a long conflict ahead. Professor, NATO is brittle to my measure because it has dissent in it and it must live on unanimity, we're told. That's the NATO format. And right now, it looks to the United States for leadership. It looks to Germany for credible way of dealing with the energy cutoff coming the new winter. And it certainly looks to Britain. Britain has turned into the most bellicose of the NATO membership. So what is NATO's point of view? Given that it's 27, 28 nations, I understand it's a many splendored presentation. But as they gather in Madrid, what is the point of view? They're exhausted. They're ready for a long fight. They're looking for a way out. They're looking for negotiations. Or they're worried that the wintertime means that their options are going to be limited.
Well, the NATO, I think, has really for the first time in her history been tested. And it isn't even tested by an invasion of a NATO member, but rather she has been tested as an ally of a country which is the victim of an invasion that's illegal under international law and everything else. And what has NATO showed? To me, the most significant thing that I've learned in the last few days is that no NATO country is capable of putting together a division which is ready for war in less than a year. In other words, for all of these decades that we've had NATO, the military capabilities of the NATO members have been deteriorating. And if you're weak, you're not really in a position to sign on to a long war. You have to make tremendous changes. Even the British, and I think you're quite right in saying that they're bellicose. I don't think they're bellicose so much as they are defiant, as Churchill recommended, when they see defeat as a possibility. And they understand that that's unacceptable. And I think Mr. Johnson, who's a very erratic figure, has at least learned that the way you win is not at the negotiating table, but by fighting. And he's been doing a great deal to put British resources and weaponry and training. They are very, very expert at the disposal of the Ukrainians. But he is, I think, the exception. If we look at Mr. Biden, who should be the leader, or Mr. Blinken, Mr. Austin I find interesting because he's enough of a soldier that he understands that you have to win a war, and to win a war you need certain things. And he isn't really at home in the in the world of empty talk that's inhabited by say our State Department. But in the case of Mr. Biden, I think we can say this: his script, which was that the Russians invade and they are then crippled by a massive economic blockade by the United States, that has failed. Putin, in fact, has more money now because oil prices have gone up than he had before. As for the Western European Alliance, the NATO, they have discovered how weak they are, how vulnerable they are, also how unwilling they are to give up heat and all the rest. Think back what happens in wars. I mean, you have rationing. I mean, it's just, you have ersatz coffee. I mean, how are the Europeans going to survive on ersatz coffee? The Brits, as I said, are good, but I would point out they cannot manufacture within Britain their own military pistols. The Germans, the French, and the Italians, I believe, are looking for an exit that will maintain their standard of living. And I think that the United States is not, we simply do not have the kind of charismatic, determined, articulate leadership backed up by a consistency of policy that is delivering weapons, delivering know-how, and so forth and so on, that would cause anybody to follow us. I mean, Eisenhower people might follow, but I think Biden is not going to stir the hearts of the Germans, the French, and the Italians and suddenly make them man up and get into this thing. What I suspect is that we're going to start seeing fissures. We're going to see breaks between the United States' articulated policy and what we deliver. We're going to see that basically the fat and lazy West European members of NATO drag their feet and try to come up with some kind of a separate peace, while the countries that are actually on the border of Russia become more and more alarmed, and who knows really what they will do, but there are lots of things that they can do, and one of them would just be to fight without NATO, to provide aid without NATO. So I think that Mr. Biden's mission is not likely to be crowned with success. A long war is the last thing that NATO wants. And I think that they will give up being NATO before they sign on to a long war. But we are, it must be admitted, in a difficult position because we have said a great deal. We have made a lot of commitments. And we're really too committed to give up. But we're also not committed enough to do what has to be done to win. And in between giving up and winning, there is not really a stable point of peace that will keep Europe at peace for decades. All there are sort of benches on which you can rest before you get ready for the next conflict. So I fear that unless NATO, the United States, and the various other countries involved come up with a coherent policy which they are willing to commit, and which above all involves enabling the Ukrainians to defeat the Russians, not in the sense of defeating Russia, but in the sense of defeating the Russian expeditionary force in Ukraine so decisively that Putin says to himself, I'm not going to send another 200,000 of my guys down there to be killed by the Ukrainians. Until we get that level of consensus and that level of determination, I think that we're facing a future in which the West may well be humiliated, and we have to consider what that means. If Putin actually wins and the West is humiliated, we're living in a new world, or one which is simply full of dangerous uncertainties, and in which we look back at moments when if only we had acted, we could have gotten long ago the results that we wanted, but they unfortunately are no longer on offer. So Putin may be quite happy today. I hope that Mr. Biden realizes what a difficult, difficult task he faces, but I'm not sure he does. And I'm also not sure that he has the people around him who would be able to implement what has to be done. So I think we're looking at a fundamental breakdown of order in Europe, which is going to be very disconcerting because since 1945, really, we have had a peaceful and orderly Europe, even with the existence of the Soviet Union. Now, with the existence of Russia, we're seeing something that we thought had disappeared, namely an ambitious power.
Professor, what will tell you that NATO is disconsolate? What will you hear from Madrid? What will you be listening to? What state member of NATO will you listen to?
Well, I would listen to all of them, but I think Germany, in many ways, is pivotal. Germany has the problem that first she is politically unstable owing to this tripartite coalition, and second, that every assumption that Germany had made since 1945 about what the United States would do and what the Soviet Union, now Russia, would do have been proven wrong. So I suspect that at this discussion of NATO, there will be a great deal of attention paid to looking for exits, looking for complex diplomatic procedures, considering trying to come up with something where everybody is satisfied and then they all go home. I think what would be significant would be if NATO, contrary to my expectations, begins to pull itself together and say, well, look, damn it, the stakes are high. We have committed a lot. We have committed a lot in words, and we have committed some in goods. We certainly have the resources to make this come out the way we want it to. So let's get to work. Let's roll up our sleeves and do the job. I'll be very surprised if I hear that, but that would be the signal that things are going to end up with a stable peace. If we hear descriptions of immensely complex diplomatic procedures or suggestions that we appease Putin by giving him more of the Ukraine than he has now, then I will say these people want to be sure that the gas is on, that they have heat in the winter, and that they have a double espresso after supper.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, on the eve of the NATO meeting in Madrid. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.